You are listening to a podcast produced by the Jackson School of International Studies and the Ellison Center for Russian, East European, and Central Asian Studies at the University of Washington. This and other podcasts can be found on iTunes and SoundCloud. For more information, visit us at jsis.washington.edu/Ellison Center.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Radnitz. I am the director of the Ellison Center for Russian, East European, and Central Asian Studies. I am hosting today's event along with Professor Sabina Long of the EU Center for Excellence. In less contentious times, the Polish election of last October would have been viewed as the monumental event that it was. In that election, the ruling Law and Justice Party in power since 2015 lost its majority. At a time when the illiberal right is ascendant across much of the world, Poland showed how opposing forces could effectively fight back. Students of democratic backsliding, competitive authoritarianism, and institutional erosion will no doubt be studying this case for a long time. Yet although the election and the formation of a new centrist government were breakthroughs, this was not the end of the story. The new government now faces challenges as it tries to govern and restore liberal democracy. The struggle to protect the rule of law in the face of illiberal challenges has implications for many other countries. Today's speaker will help make sense of what's happening now in Poland. Before I introduce him, I want to note that you, the audience, can ask questions at any time through the Q&A function. And after the talk is over, Professor Long and I will field some of these questions to ask the speaker. Today's speaker is David Ost, a professor of politics at Hobart and William Smith Colleges in Geneva, New York. He's written widely on Eastern Europe with a focus on Poland, labor, class, democracy, and the radical right. He's written several books on solidarity and the edited volume Class After Communism. Recent articles include Why Witch Workers Often Oppose Witch Democracy and the Surprising Right-Wing Relevance of the Russian Revolution. He is currently finishing a book titled Red Pill Politics, Fascism and Right-Wing Populism. And now we will hear from David Ost.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Scott, Sabine, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk about these issues. I don't have slides. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, but, you know, I'm a talking head for the next half hour or so. I hope to make it interesting. So, the topic is fascinating, and it's Polish politics has kept me focused for a long time. I've been going there since I was 20 years old, and I'm a couple of years shy of 70, but that's still a long time. I've been going over there, and it's always an interesting place. Sometimes, unfortunately, for Poland, it's so interesting because a lot of different things happen there. But anyway, it's a fascinating time again because of these developments. So my talk is titled "Undoing Legal Authoritarianism," and it refers to what Professor Radnitz just mentioned at the very beginning. Namely, that in October of last year, October 2023, a new government was elected that was a coalition of parties that were very much opposed to the government that had been in power for 8 years, the Law and Justice Party. The initials are PIS, which in Polish is pronounced peace, the same way as we might say world peace. I'll be using that term peace to refer to the Law and Justice Party led by Jarosław Kaczynski, which had been in power for those 8 years. Now, and the new government, a coalition government headed by former prime minister, a liberal, Donald Tusk, who had been president of the European Union for a while earlier, and has been an important liberal Polish politician. The coalition is also an alliance with the left group in Poland, as well as with moderate conservatives. So using the term legal authoritarianism assumes that we're dealing with something that can be called authoritarian. Now, some question this, some might question this, and some do, on the simple grounds that the Law and Justice Party did, after all, give up power on in late 2023. And authoritarianism, for many means, you don't give up power. So let me try to put the matter here in perspective and present some history for those who aren't so familiar of that. The story starts, we can say, obviously we can always go back more and more, but I'll begin it with the fall of 2015 when Jarosław Kaczyński's Law and Justice Party won parliamentary elections, enabling it also to govern without any coalition partner. That was the first time that it happened since the new post-communist system, the new democratic system, began in 1989. Now, peace had shown these illiberal authoritarian tendencies before. And I think one way to really conceptualize the problem, the issue, is that peace has long insisted that it alone represents the nation. Now, these words kind of sound innocuous, right? This party insists that it alone represents a nation. Isn't this something that every party might say? But actually, no, they don't. Not in the meaning that peace and other so-called right-wing populists, to use the term that is so prominent today, they have a different meaning of that. First of all, the term the nation. Most of us use that term kind of colloquially, and it means just the citizens of a given country, right? The nation. That's how we tend to use it, most of us. For peace, though, the nation is a crucial term. They always speak about the nation, narod. They rarely use the term społeczeństwo, society, right? The nation is some unified thing. In for peace, and this has been a common theme in much of Europe, going back to fascist times of Europe, where they to use the term the nation as some intangible, rather mystical idea said to be unique to the dominant group, the dominant ethnic group or national group of each country. It's not an empirical thing at all, right? They don't use the nation as being something empirical. It's an idea, an essence, aspirational, spiritual. And of course, anyone making this claim about the nation that they represented insists that they know exactly what this is and that only they know what this is, right? Anyone else trying to give that the nation a name, a description, anyone else trying to speak in the name of the nation, for those, for these right-wing populists for peace, that's simply a false claim, right? So that peace took this idea seriously was clear from the get-go, right? That is, they came to power without a coalition partner. They know what's in the interest of the nation. They're going to govern now for the nation on behalf of the nation, which is similar to their will and what they, because only they represent it. Now, its first moves right in the beginning of 2015 was to take over the Constitutional Court in Poland, the one that judges whether laws are constitutional, to ensure that there could be no controls whatsoever on what it did. That is, peace would go on to violate the Constitution in many ways. It never had a parliamentary majority to change the Constitution. In Hungary, Viktor Orban in Hungary has had that parliamentary majority to change the constitution, which is a reason why this legal authoritarianism has been much more stable and long-lasting in Hungary. Beuys was able to violate the constitution but not change it. So they needed right away to marginalize or transform the constitutional court to ensure that there could be no controls over what it did. So what when that court in 2015 ruled that Beuys's efforts to change the constitutional court were themselves against the constitution, Beuys simply ignored the rulings. That is, that was a remarkable thing to observe. It was the first time in the fall of 2015, they had all these plans. The constitutional court, specified by the constitution to be the final arbiter of what the law is, would rule that various things the parliament, Kaczynski's party did were against the constitution, and Kaczynski and Beuys simply ignored it. One of their highlighting quotes at the time. Why did they ignore it? As one of their supporters said in Parliament, any law that is against the interests of the nation is not law, it's lawlessness, right? Got a standing ovation. Any law not in the interests of the nation. And again, that assumes only they know what is in the interests of the nation. So when the Constitutional Court ruled against them, they simply said, well, the nation is opposed to this. The nation does not accept it. So the Constitutional Court is marginalized. And then they were able to stack this court with their own people over the coming years. And they've transformed the judiciary very dramatically. Now, even the European Court of Justice, which is formally the highest authority, judicial authority in the European Union, has ruled against peace and against its judicial transformations many times, but these has simply ignored them too. Now, in Parliament, what they did was they drastically reduced the rights of the opposition parliamentarians. Opposition parties existed for sure, but they could virtually do nothing. Beuys would introduce a bill sometimes in the afternoon or early evening and have Parliament vote on it that night. That is, it went through the various readings that the Constitution calls for. They would have questions. No one would answer those questions because there'd be an official time for questions. And then simply rather than answer the questions, they would say, let's go for a vote. Now, these were not just any old bills that they did in this way. These were crucially important bills in the first year. So, for example, bills on this constitutional court, how to change that they would just push this through. Or a crucial issue on politicizing the civil service, where no longer is neutrality necessary. That had been a principle. It's usually a principle of governments to ensure that there's no corruption. Civil service people swear oath of loyalty to the state, to the Constitution, not to a political party. And the assumption of neutrality is crucial. That is something that also they legally pushed through to alter that, where you could belong to a party, no experience or professional experience was necessary. You only need to be on the right side. They also that made state institutions in the service, not of the state, in the service of one party. A very crucial law also passed within a day to turn all public media into government mouthpieces. That is, public media, state media, again governed by the Constitution, they simply put this in their own hands. And another law to allow surveillance without check. And it's turned out now, as the new government has shown, that they installed this Pegasus software to track opposition politicians and sometimes even of their own politicians. Now, What's important for present purposes for this talk about undoing authoritarianism is how they passed laws to make sure that their policies would continue to dominate even if they lost elections. This is the idea of this legal authoritarianism. I mean, in today's world, right, authoritarianism doesn't come about by abolishing elections and ruling by fiat. Again, 100 years ago, that was more popular. That was more prominent. 100 years ago, still, for much of the world, democracy was understood as a bad word. Today, that's changed in most of the world. And most people consider themselves that, okay, I like democracy. What? How do most people understand democracy? That there are different parties and there are elections. What this party has done, like other right-wing populist parties aim to do, is to make their positions dominate again, even if and when they lose election. They, right, citizens again won't accept that they simply abolish elections. So instead, they try to make it extremely difficult for the opposition to win or to pass laws, and to make it difficult, if not impossible, to govern if they do win. Now, these issues, I've always studied Poland, not just because I'm fascinated in Poland, but because it's always been a place. I mean, European politics and Polish politics, in many ways, been a place that show tendencies that happen all around the world. And these policies and this question is really important more generally, too. Donald Trump, for example, has made it clear that if he wins, he will try to get rid of the professional civil service. They have bills ready to go forth, either by executive order, if they don't win both houses of Congress, to get rid of the idea of a professional civil service in the United States as well. They have hundreds, if not thousands, of names already of loyalists that they're ready to put in there. They talk about this openly, right? And they also it's a specific plan to get rid of the independence of the Justice Department, the U.S. Constitution that's formally. Well, maybe not be in the Constitution. Now, I'm not sure of that, but the tradition has been all along that the Justice Department is formally independent from the executive. That's why you have special prosecutors for things. And they're specifically aimed to get rid of that independence. And of course, this idea that only he represents the nation. I mean, it's been quite clear from the fact that, of course, Trump doesn't accept elections if he loses them, right? They must be falsified. They're against the nation. The nation cannot, by definition, vote against him. And so it must be rigged. So these kinds of issues and the kinds of policies that are planned in a second Trump administration, if that comes about, or the kinds of things being considered by right-wing populist parties elsewhere, again, are the kinds of things that make this case what's happening now in Poland, to see how that legal authoritarianism can be undone to make it such a crucial test case. So let's look at the two issues that have been so prominent immediately when the new coalition of Donald Tusk came to power late in 2023. Now, for example, the question of the media, the state media. As I said earlier, what Beast did was to take over all public media, and because Poland has several state-owned TV and radio stations. All of which have been used in these past 8 years to daily slander the opposition, to lie to the public about its intentions. Even peace supporters have acknowledged that the flagship national daily news program, which is the only news program available to many citizens, since the others are require various cable subscriptions to access. So even its supporters acknowledge that the news was wildly over the top, wildly really just falsified. When I've watched it in the last couple of years, there would literally be about 20 of the 25 minutes of the main news program devoted to accusing the opposition of treason. I don't use that word lightly. They regularly said that the opposition and Donald Tusk are German agents. Quite simply, that what they do is in the interest of Germany, traitors to the country. These news programs have promoted the most extreme far-right conspiracy theories, such as the Great Replacement Theory, the idea that the biggest totalitarian threat today comes from gender ideology, that Catholics are being persecuted worldwide. I remember watching when peace just took over the media in 2015 and turning on a TV program and discussion program. And now they have the speakers there saying this was 2015 at the height of the refugee problem, crisis, or events going on with immigrants coming in to Western Europe and through Eastern Europe as well. And the talk show host said, okay, now we can tell the truth that any migrant coming over from Arab countries is a terrorist, and anyone saying otherwise is just succumbing to political correctness. And they considered, I mean, this became a place of state-sponsored bigotry that the media was covering. Now, it would seem obvious that a new government would obviously have the right to change that, except that peace had changed the law governing the media, governing control of the media, giving it to a so-called National Media Council. Again, the word nation, because it's only unified. They gave it to a National Media Council whose members were appointed by peace, could not be legally revoked by the government. So this meant, and in fact, this happened, the new government came to power, and you'd still have the state media running a news program, the single dominant news program that was reviling that government and slandering that government daily. Now, in the Justice Department, there was something similar going on. Peace has been very credibly accused of massive abuses of the law. It's openly violated binding judicial decisions. It's changed the way judges are appointed. It installed new types of disciplinary commissions, again declared illegal by the European Union, that are used to sanction any judges who have gone against them. Peace has been involved in very large corruption cases. If a new government in general could be said to have the rights to do anything, that would be the right to investigate wrongdoing, alleged wrongdoing. So the new government duly appointed a new Minister of Justice, but again, one of the mines laid by peace to permit to keep it in power, peace just prior to losing power had created a new position, again not accepted by the Constitution, called National Prosecutor, and installed in that position a party loyalist who also had a term of office going another 3 years or so. The new government was thus legally barred from carrying out in criminal investigations of peace abuse of power. So what to do about this? Well, now we get to exactly what the title of the talk, Undoing Legal Authoritarianism. How did the government set about trying to do it? Well, on the media question, the new Minister of Culture announced that the state And not the National Media Council owned state TV. He pointed to the Constitution that has no mention of something called the National Media Council and used that as the basis that the state owns this. He cut off the broadcast signal of the hostile station, supposedly the hostile public media station, and put together a new broadcast news program from a new location. In response, the president, because peace, Poland has a president with less power than an American president, but still he must be able to sign laws and can veto them. The president, who's a peace supporter and has another year left in office, vetoed emergency funds necessary to keep the new broadcast going. At which point, the Minister of Culture changed position and said, well, since the media no longer has the funds that's necessary, then I declare the media, state media, legally bankrupt and appoint temporary caretakers to govern it. As this happened, the peace broadcasters locked themselves in their offices. They talked about an attack on democracy, a new totalitarianism, and seemingly believed that they had a right to endlessly use state media to attack government media, to attack government policies. Meanwhile, what happens in the crucial Justice Department? Well, the Minister of Justice, the new Minister of Justice, Adam Bodnar is his name, produced five legal opinions showing that, in fact, the national prosecutor had, in fact, been constitutionally ineligible to take up the post when he was appointed. They found a very kind of small little element here that is, was a technicality, basically. But the technicality was clear that that piece's national prosecutor had no right to be there. And so, on those grounds, the Minister of Justice offered that prosecutor to resign. When he wouldn't do so, the Minister of Justice simply appointed a different one and said that now he's in office. This has created a great deal of problems in the Justice Department because there are many regional prosecutors that had been appointed by the previous Minister of Justice. The new government is claiming the right to reappoint them. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And some of those prosecutors, regional prosecutors, say they simply won't follow the new order. So the new Tusk government is taking the steps necessary for necessary to govern. It won the election. It's trying to govern. It's sweeping away the minefields that have been laid by peace, aimed at blowing up the chances for a non-peace government to govern. Right? So they knew exactly what they were doing, and the new coalition has come out very strong against it. But here is the final issue I'll deal with. Is any of this legal? What the new government is doing? They're trying to restore the rule of law. They talk about that all the time. The rule of law was violated by peace in so many different ways. The European Court of Justice has acknowledged that. There are a few really who deny that. So they're trying to restore the rule of law, clearly violated by peace, who made law into a plaything serving the party. But the problem is that peace law is nevertheless the Their laws may have been introduced by having violated some laws, but peace proposals were then voted on into law by a legally elected parliament, signed by a legally elected president. By ignoring and bypassing the National Media Council or the BIS's national prosecutor, are they in fact the ones now violating the law? This is the great debate. These are the questions. This is why it shows that when they take such a position, the legal authoritarians, right-wing populists, follow this line, they create a whole problems of trying to reverse that, because the reversion seems to itself be against the law. And there's no way to definitively solve it. That is, there are the Constitutional Court is still now in the hands of peace. They have already ruled in the last couple of months. They actually were not taking any decisions at all. They were hardly active the last year of peace. Now, since the new government has installed the Constitutional Court under the control of the old regime, has been passing decision after decision saying you can't do this, you can't do that. What does the government say? The government say, I think there's a Latin term, non esti. It doesn't exist, right? That decision is legally void because it's been carried out by an institution that is that was brought about mistakenly against the law. Nevertheless, it is the Constitutional Court, right? So it gives the right and peace a chance to say we are being violated. Democracy is under greatest attack. This is the true totalitarianism. Now, some of these criticisms are unhinged, like some of the peace claims. That is about a new totalitarianism. Because clearly, I mean, the argument against that is that clearly there is no possible constitutional arrangement in which a democratically elected government would be required to hand control over its media and control over law enforcement to its mortal enemies. That simply mocks the idea of democracy and elected governments. On the other hand, the new government is clearly, even openly, committed to finding even the tiniest loopholes to undo peace laws. Even some sympathizers of the new government say it's going too far. Some have even said one of the strongest criticisms has been, Putinism has always often been based upon find me the man and I'll find the clause, meaning the clause in the law that could be used against him. And so opposition now, the peace opposition, is saying, you're just trying to find laws against this, right? Even a left-wing supporter of the new government is worried and says that this government is acting according to might makes right principles. And he fears that it will only energize peace for when and if it comes back to power to do the same thing, right? Because they're saying they're violating all law. And of course, they don't mention how they made this original gross violation of the law of the Constitution in 2015. Now, of course, the new government is trying to resolve the problem. It knows that this is a problem. Media and prosecution were the most important issues right away, and they're taking and they acknowledge they took extraordinary steps at the very beginning. Now they are proposing just now in the current days. I've been reading in the press here a whole new laws being put forth to Parliament to resolve the issue of the Constitutional Court, to try to make it legal again, to deal with the issues of how judges are created, right? And they're saying some of their supporters of what they're doing have said, some have even cited Justice Robert Jackson, US Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson, with the famous quote in 1949, saying the Constitution is not a suicide pact, right? Saying that the Constitution gives governments, must give governments, elected governments, a chance to govern. And so on those grounds, that's what they're doing. So these issues are not resolved. These issues and the debate goes through right now, And again, the relevance of this, as I mentioned before, but it's something that is in my mind very much in the United States. That is because you're going to have, they're already announcing all these kinds of legal changes that will really undo neutrality of government institutions, that will aim to turn the state into a party state. I mean, again, Trump has always been very open, right? Anyone who goes against his will is a traitor, right? I mean, you can't be more open than he has been. Other parties in Western Europe, few are as open as Trump about this, but have the same kinds of things. So again, Poland, and I'll conclude with this, right? Poland has that experience, is undergoing right now this vitally crucial experience of trying to undo it. They run the risk of perhaps, being seen by others as themselves violating the law, which would simply basically eliminate law and turn government into the kind of regime argued and theorized by the Nazi jurist Carl Schmitt, that it's about governments and states declaring who their enemies are, and it's simply not, undermining any idea of pluralism. This government is trying to turn away from that, to undo it, and it finds itself in this great debate and in these conditions that we're facing now. So there's no single answer ending this, but rather this experiment is ongoing now. So thanks very much, and I'm happy to take any kind of questions you might have.